Welcome to episode 44 of season 9 of Movie Minute, the daily podcast where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the final two really, really bad Die Hard movies, Die Hard 4.0 and A Good Day to Die Hard, 5 minutes at a time, which I'm so grateful that I'm doing it 5 minutes at a time instead of 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again this season, someone who is also another glutton for punishment and decided to, brace himself and watch this movie too, is Travis Bowe of Minute of Thieves. Welcome back to the show, Travis.
Hello there. Thank you for having me back.
Again, I apologize for making you watch this movie.
it wasn't terrible.
No, you see, again, I've talked about this many times, obviously, yeah, in the last, 43 episodes so far, and I'm sure that I will continue talking about them for the next three episodes that we have left. But the biggest problem with this movie is it's not a Die Hard movie. It's an action movie. And, yeah. I mean, it's just a dumb plot that makes so little sense. And as you're going through it, even in minute detail of 5 minutes at a time, you can find so many plot holes that just don't make any sense.
Yeah.
I agree with you. There are fun parts of it. You know, the chase scenes are nice. The action set pieces and the explosions and all that, they're done well. But they make no sense. that's the part of the problem. You know, I guess you can say you expect more of a movie with the Die Hard words attached to it.
I'm sure it's been talked about already. It definitely, I noticed up front with kind of that highway chase that it was on. You know, it's nothing but like they just cut back to Bruce Willis and he throws out a quip or a one-liner, and then a lot of it, the action stuff. It's like, oh, it's his son takes care of the action. You know, while John runs around. You know, it's apparent that we're going to have Bruce Willis do less of the physical stuff, you know.
Right. He is 58 at this point, so.
Right. Yeah. So that definitely is noticeable throughout, so.
Yeah. What is your history with this movie?
Yeah, this was it. This was, I watched it 2 days ago for the first time, so.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And so going again, into I this. I think when we talked about the fourth one, I couldn't remember if I had seen this one, number 5, and I went into it thinking I'm either going to recognize parts of it, you know, and find out that I had seen this before once, but no, none of it was familiar, so I can confidently say that I had never seen this one. So
okay, so you can now check it off your list, you know.
Sure.
You've seen it once and that'll be it, you know.
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
Yeah. Again, one of the things that I always mention is the fact that, you know, after I do a movie, you know, minute by minute, so I usually enjoy the movie even more afterwards because I now have a deeper understanding of it and stuff like that. And so sure. I'm still debating what's going to happen with this movie.
right.
You know, I did a year ago. I watched it a year ago and I had given it a 1 out of 10. That's
okay.
That's how bad it was. And then when I rewatched it right before starting to go through it, you know, this season, I upped it to a 2.
Okay. So I use Letterboxd just to track all my movies and stuff, and I gave it a 2 out of 5. You know, I feel like it's
okay. All right, so you liked it more than I did, so that's good.
Apparently, yeah.
But that's okay. You know, as I'm a fan of saying, if we all liked movies the exact same way, it would just be boring to talk about it. So at least, so now you have to try and convince me this is a better movie than it really is, I guess.
yeah. Well, one thing that I noticed up, you know, early on in the movie, and then I noticed shades of it in these minutes that we're talking about, Marco Beltrami, who does the music for this one, he really does a good job of channeling the Michael Kamen score from Die Hard. There are several moments in this, the score for this, you know, the track for this kind of action sequence that feel like Die Hard. So that was a big win for me.
Yeah. Yeah. I did notice that also. But that's pretty much it. Like, I guess on Friday, that actually said that the best part of this movie is the trailer where they actually play Ode to Joy.
Oh, you okay.
So, you know, what can I tell you?
Yeah.
All right, so episode 44 begins with John continuing to shoot towards Yuri and ends with Yuri trying to get in the last word.
Yuri, okay. I had no idea. I just kept writing down bad guy, you know, and and his daughter. Like, I didn't know, you know, anyone's name in this.
It doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
Well, you do know someone's name. You know well, those two characters' names.
You know what I mean.
Yeah, yes. Exactly. So we begin this. It's like basically what happened yesterday is John and Jack started shooting towards the direction of Yuri as Yuri's running away from them because the helicopter is getting closer and stuff like that. And we see him, you know, climb up. He's running up the stairs. And as he's running up the stairs, we see him on the phone and he says, "Irina, I'm going to the roof. The roof." You know, which I think is, I've talked a lot about this in this movie. There are a hell of a lot of things that feel like Die Hard callbacks. Mm. You know, the idea that, okay, they're going to the roof. Get to the roof. You know, but Carl's on the roof. You know, that. Like,
yeah.
Like that.
Yeah.
Carl is not on this roof. and we will have other things that are going to happen tomorrow that we can attribute to someone, probably John Moore, thinking that, hey, this is going to look like something else in a diary.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so we'll get there.
Right.
We'll get there. And, you know, so we see that, you know, he's running up and Irina's running out towards the helicopter. And we see that both John and Jack are you know, shooting in different directions. And then Irina starts running towards the helicopter. And we can, you know, we see McClane motion to Jack. and then, you know, he throws something. Jack throws something to John.
Yeah.
You know, we'll find out shortly what that's going to be. And then... then we hear Senate 91 power plant, all good to go. Let's go. So you know you have all these Russian guys that are dealing with stuff, and we have this you know Russian goon who you know as my guest on Friday also mentioned, he really does look like a you know one of the, he looks like Drax.
Mm.
You know, he's
yeah
a,
yeah. I see that. Yeah. You mentioned a second ago the hand signals that John gives to Jack, and yeah. It just looks like it looks like hand signal gibberish. Like, you know, it just looks like it doesn't look like, here, throw me a grenade. You know, I don't know what these hand signals, you know, how they're supposed to be interpreted as throw me a grenade, but.
It's like, you know, maybe when they used to play ball when he was a kid, that's what they would do.
I think, like, to me, like, grenade, if you're trying to do a hand signal for grenade, you hold your hand up to your mouth and act like you're biting out the pin, you know, and maybe do like a lob sort of motion. Like, but yeah, maybe it's like they've both had enough military training that maybe that's like shorthand for grenade somehow, but
your guess is as good as mine.
Yeah,
when it comes to that. And so this goon just keeps shooting at them, and we see that you know Jack lobs the grenade to John, who starts setting something on the grenade, and then we get a shot outside of the helicopter getting ready to take off. Irina gets into the co-pilot seat, you know, and we see that the goon, we're back inside with the goon just shooting, and there's like a what looks like a forklift just running towards him.
Yeah, it's a stand up lift.
Yeah, which it looks really weird, the whole idea that you know, because we don't really see that it's either John or Jack, so it's like, how did they, you know, how did they turn off the brake and let it keep going or something like that?
Yeah, it took me a minute to figure out, because when John is kind of when he gets the grenade, it then like zooms up to something on the stand-up lift, and I finally realized it's like the controls, but it's not, you know.
Well, I think it's like the brake, wasn't it? Maybe
sure,
like
yeah, some kind of control on the lift, but it was like it took me several, you know, times watching it to realize what are they showing us here. And then as they, you know, the lift starts coming towards the goon, and then he realizes that there's something wedged into the, you know, that part of the lift with, it's the grenade, of course, you know, it's like, oh, yeah. It just took too long to kind of figure out what they're trying to show me, you know, but.
Okay. Well, what do you know about forklifts?
I've worked around them a bit. I've worked in warehouses. I've driven forklifts. I've driven this kind of stand-up lift, you know, so I've used them, but I don't know a lot about them. I wouldn't say.
Do you know any other names for a forklift?
Other than, yeah, like the stand-up lift, a lift, mover. I don't know. I might once you tell me.
Okay, so it's also known as an industrial truck,
a lift truck,
a jitney.
Oh, okay.
A high low. A fork truck,
yeah.
A fork hoist, or a forklift truck. That's more or less the things. Do you have any idea when it was first developed?
Ooh. In like there may be pre. I'm trying to think. Like, I would say the modern forklift probably in the 50s or 60s, but then there could be like various mechanical versions of it, you know, prior to that, that didn't require, you know, like these are propane powered or some are electric, you know. But I would say in the 1900s, you know, okay. between the 40s and 60s, I would say.
Okay. So 1906 was the first time that they introduced a battery powered platform trucks for moving luggage at the Pennsylvania Railroad station.
Okay.
And then obviously during World War One, they started using them more in order to move things. You know, and as you mentioned, World War Two, it became even more popular. It was helping out with the with the war effort and stuff like that. How many people do you think are annually injured in the U.S.? that are in forklift related incidents,
right? Oh, so many. I would say between 100 and 500.
7,500.
Wow.
Injured. And approximately how many people do you think are killed a year in forklift related accidents?
If 7,500, I'd say of those, we'll say 250.
No, the number's only 100, thankfully.
Oh, okay. You say thankfully, but maybe that's, you know, you're getting those genes out of the gene
that's
pool.
True. Weaning them out of the gene pool. That's right. Okay. All right. There's something to that. Most of the time it's from people who are caught in objects during loading or unloading or collisions, while driving forklifts. There are a lot of lower extremity injuries with relatively high occurrences of complications, which also makes sense from that. They do have a lot of safety features that apparently. I guess they work well enough that only 7,500 people are injured a year.
Right. Yeah.
They have high visibility seatbelts, lighting in order to warn pedestrians that a forklift is coming, sensors that slow the vehicle to prevent collisions. There are sensors in order to detect pedestrians, objects, or both that are in the driver's blind spots. Things like that. But apparently, it's still not enough.
Because they
say that one of the problems is that these sensors don't discriminate between people and objects. So you think, I'm gonna be hitting a box. Oops, yeah. that was Bill. You know, it's like I don't know. That could be a little bit of a problem. So we have this forklift that's rolling down the warehouse that they're in, I guess you can say.
Sure.
I don't know what else to call this. Where do you store plutonium? In Chernobyl? I
Right.
don't know. then we see that the goon shoots at it, thinking apparently that someone's in it or whatever. And then as it gets closer, as you said, it stops, and then he sees the grenade right wedged in. It's not even wedged into the brake. It's like wedged between two like suitcases that
Yeah.
are there, or something like that. Like really, really. Again, this once again shows the sloppiness of this movie's script. They're like, we'll just put it in.
Yeah.
In a movie that wanted to make more sense, John would find some sort of elastic adhesive or something like that, and
Yeah.
tie it to. And wrap it around and tie it to the brake, and that the brake wouldn't be able to stop and all that
Yeah.
stuff. But it's just like, we'll just put it on. let it just go. And then there's this huge, huge explosion that first of all, it's really cool looking. There's no question
Yeah,
about it. You got to
the
give it
blue
credit for
flame,
the
yeah, because
that's
of
right. The blue
the
flame is
gas,
very,
yeah.
very cool. Yes. I like the explosion. But again, it makes no sense whatsoever that this goon is obliterated, but John and Jack are both behind like pillars and they're fine.
Well, as they teach everyone in school, the duck and cover is the best, defense against being engulfed in flames.
Of course, especially
They
in those places.
both just get into a ball and put their hands over their heads. They're literally, that duck and cover sort of position. It's so stupid. Like, why? Thing is like that's fine, but because it's also that's protecting them against the falling debris from the explosion, but then don't add the visuals of like both of them, or at least one of them, being literally engulfed in flames,
That's right. That's right.
They should have just delete that,
Yes.
layer
And
layer of
this is
the
the
animation.
director's cut.
Is it?
So, yes.
Huh.
The director's cut is 3 minutes longer than the theatrical cut.
Yeah. Or at least.
In these minutes there aren't any differences.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember. I know he removes his jacket.
Yeah, well, we're not there yet. We're so
Okay. Okay.
at this point, Jack then goes, "Oh, subtle."
Yeah, I do
And
like
John
that. That's a
pretty
good
much,
line.
yeah. And then John goes, "What the hell is in those grenades?
Yeah.
Those goddamn grenades." And then John points to the stairs, where Yuri has gone up, and he screams at Jack. He goes, "Go get him! I'm
Yeah.
going to the helicopter." So
Okay.
again, it's let's split up. I'll go after this guy. You go after her. You go after him. I'll go after her.
Right.
Again, it makes no sense whatsoever the way this whole thing. I guess John thinks that it's easier to run, across the quad in order to get into the helicopter instead of having to climb up the however many
It
flights of stairs it is. I
yeah.
don't
It makes sense to have the old man not go try to run upstairs.
Right. Could
Yeah.
be. And then we get a shot of Yuri, opening the door to the roof and coming out. And again, he also wasn't affected at all by this explosion that just happened, maybe two floors below him,
Sure.
but I'm sure that the whole building should have shook a little bit at
Yeah.
least.
Yeah.
So yeah, I don't know. And he's looking around trying to figure out what he's gonna do. And then he picks up a gun. Good thing there was a gun there. And then, as you said, John takes off his jacket
Yeah.
and pulls out his gun and starts running. John runs towards the helicopter and Jack starts running up the stairs. That's the way they are. And I like how John has, he's got the blood on his white t-shirt. It's I think part of the idea here, and I've talked about this a few times over the last week or so, the lighting in these scenes in Chernobyl are horrendous.
Yes.
hard to really tell what's going on. You know,
I had a note on that too. Just how
most movies find a surprise way to make things look brighter than they really are. And in this movie, they just said, "To hell with it, we don't care." You know, so the good thing of John taking off his jacket is now we know the guy in the white shirt is John.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that's a way to identify John McClane.
Yeah. Yeah, once Jack catches up to Yuri on the roof and they kind of start going at it, it's just kind of like, just darkness. You know, there's some, it's very hard to see what's going on. So.
Yeah. Yeah. And then we get about a minute of, John running towards the helicopter, making sure that he tries to get on it before they close the door. Maybe they're waiting for the goon. I don't know. And, he's only able to grab on as it lifts off, and he has to climb up a little bit. So they got a little work there for his stunt double, because I'm assuming that's not Bruce Willis doing that.
Probably not.
And then we get a quick shot of Jack running upstairs again, and then John is crawling into the helicopter itself, and then we get a shot of the pilot, and they're talking, and he goes, "Vadim, watch the tail. Copy. You're at 120 meters, 115 meters. You know, trying to figure out what's going on."
Yeah.
They have no clue.
I struggled with like I said, I watched this a couple days ago, and then watching the clip for, to take notes and everything, I kind of lost track of what are we trying to accomplish here? Like, I think they came to this facility because they want to steal this weapons grade, uranium or something.
That's right.
So I'm guessing, they've got the truck and some uranium loaded up on the helicopter, I think. And I had a disconnect of why I couldn't remember why Yuri got separated from them on the chopper. Why were they lifting off and were they planning to then land somewhere to collect Yuri? I couldn't figure out what the plan was here.
Right. Well, yesterday we saw that they got into a little bit of a firefight. John and Jack started shooting at Yuri and Irina, and they got separated. And that's why at the beginning of this segment, Yuri tells her that he's on the roof.
Okay.
So he wants her to take the helicopter out there. Again, it's all stupid. Try and find any real logic in this.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then, John crawls under the truck and shoots two more goons in the legs, and they fall down and then shoots them again.
Is it two? I thought it was just one. I thought he shot a guy in the foot and then that guy falls and then he shoots that guy in the head.
Nope. There's two guys that fall. And then he shoots them both. He's crawling through, and at this point he shoots at the guy's legs, the guy falls down, and then he shoots him and kills him. Oh, you're right. Maybe it is only one goon. Okay, you're right. It is only one goon.
Okay.
There you go. All right, I take that back. Again, I told you this might sound like an excuse, but the lighting here is really, really
Yeah.
So it doesn't that doesn't help.
Well, and the thing that I found notable about that is think of, Die Hard with a Vengeance, when John, when they finally make it onto the ship, the boat that they had to rappel down to, he finds the container, finds out it's full of junk or whatever. And then he has this drag out fight with,
Torgo.
Yeah. I was surprised that here, if this movie were made 10, 15 years ago, this would have been a big fight between John and this goon, right?
Exactly. Because it's 18 years after Die Hard with a Vengeance. So,
sure.
So that means that Bruce Willis was 40 when they made Die Hard with a Vengeance, and now he's 58. So, let's just make it easier for him. Maybe it's part of the whole Indiana Jones idea,
right.
Harrison Ford has diarrhea one day, so let's just shoot the guy instead of fighting him.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just let's make it easier on the actor.
Right.
And then we get another shot of Jack continuing to to run up the stairs, and then he reaches the top of the, he's on the roof, which apparently Yuri left the door open because, you know, Yuri opened the door, but Jack just ran through it. Mm. And then there's a little bit of a firefight between Jack and Yuri. Again, makes absolutely no sense the way this whole thing happens. And then we're back at the helicopter where one of the one of the pilots goes, "Hey, there's small arms fire coming from the roof."
Oh, okay.
I was like,
yeah, okay. Missed a lot of that detail because the clip I was watching didn't have subtitles. So right. Okay. It's like I was kind of, for the most part, guessing of like, this is kind of what, I mean, it's, they make it pretty obvious kind of what they're,
yeah,
you
know, exactly.
You know, but.
And then we're back with John, who's trying to figure out how he's going to get into the cockpit. And he sees that the door is locked. And then he decides to shoot into it.
Yeah. John shoots a door. That's one of my notes.
That's right. Exactly. And what does one of the pilot then say? He says, "We have a guest."
Okay.
Exactly. Nice. And then he goes, "Watch the tail for me there. Come on." So, again, the whole thing is just a little strange. And he goes, "Come on, hurry." And he goes, "Vadim, give me fire and control now. Engaging." And, you know, they decide that they're going to, you know, start shooting at the roof itself, which Yuri apparently knows this is what's happening, so he goes mm-hmm. and hides for the whole thing.
I was curious, what is the exchange between Yuri and his daughter? Because I feel
that's the exchange that I was just reading. That was between them. He says to her, come on, hurry. And then she speaks to Vadim and says, "Give me fire and control now, engaging." So she's there to go try and and help. That's the exchange between them. And again, it makes no sense. John looks out the window or at the door, and he sees that they're getting ready to shoot at Jack. And he just screams to him and he goes, "Jack!" Again, it goes with this entire movie, where, you know, people can be in the middle of a chase or in the middle of a firefight, and they're able to have conversations with everyone else. Yeah. Hear them. You know,
I expected John to. He might be out of bullets at this point. I don't know. But I expected him to just, when he looks out and notices that the gun is like, he can hear it, I think, spooling up, getting ready to fire. And I just expected him to just shoot the gun, you know. Disable the gun like that. I thought that was going to be his move. So,
right, which he did. You know, that's what he did in Die Hard 2, by just putting his jacket in the you know, on the wing of the plane in order to try to stop it from taking off.
Yeah.
And then Yuri says to Irina, "Shoot him," and she goes, "With pleasure, Papa."
Okay.
And then John decides that he's you know, gonna do something about it. And first of all, again, the she starts shooting, and great pyrotechnics here.
Yeah.
You know, again, that's one of the things they really did get right here. Mm-hmm. But you want there to be a story that you're gonna care about and characters you're gonna care about. You know, even as much as I love John McClane, I don't really care much about what happens to. I mean, I don't want him to die. You know, I know he's gonna get injured. He always gets injured. You know, but you know. That's about it. It's like, do I really care if they figure out who the bad guy is and what they do? No. You know. So, and then John, you know, says for the upteenth time in this movie, "I'm on fucking vacation."
Yeah, that was a weird, like, recurring sort of catchphrase for this movie. Yeah. Like, are you? Yeah.
You know, every time I heard him say it, I always think of you know, Billy Crystal in City Slickers. That's about it. And that really is vacation. This not.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, so I don't know. The whole thing is just very, very weird the way that they deal with it. Mm-hmm. And then John decides to you know, we see him getting into the truck, but we don't really know what he's gonna be doing. And then Irina says, "Vadim, he's here, I see him." And, you know, she starts shooting at the direction of where Jack is. And we see that Jack's in trouble.
Yeah.
You know, the bullets are getting closer to him and all that. And then there's, like, light that shines over Jack. And then we see John's face, and then John goes, "The shit we do for our kids." And then he turns on the truck and goes, "Yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker." Now, I want to point out that in the theatrical version, he doesn't say yippee-ki-yay. That was left out. He says, "The shit we do for our kids," and that's it.
Okay.
So I guess you can say this is another good thing that John Moore did in the in the director's cut by adding that in there.
Sure.
Because it's John McClane, so you gotta have it. Why not have a yippee-ki-yay in every single movie?
Right.
And then we get a shot of the helicopter, and we see that it starts tilting, upwards. The front starts tilting upwards, and out of the back we see a truck start pulling. It's connected on a chain, but it looks like it's falling out, and we have all these boxes that are falling out and stuff like that. Again, to me, this is a callback to Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, where Indiana is fighting with what's his name,
Molaram,
yeah. Right? And you see the stones start flying out, because they're like boxes falling out of this truck. Obviously, those boxes all have
the stuff they want. Yeah.
Uranium.
Yeah.
I keep going back to the Doc Brown and plutonium
sure.
thing.
Yeah.
It's really weird to say this, but it looks like the helicopter is about to give birth because something's coming out the back.
Yeah.
You know, that type of thing. It's just very, very strange. Huh. And then one of the Russians goes, "What happened?" And someone then CG shifted. And he goes, "I've got full forward cyclic." He goes, "I can't hold it." So again, this is it's very comical the way this whole thing is playing out.
Yeah, I like this stunt. I really do. I was dubious, I guess, at first when I saw the helicopter lifting up and then realizing that there was a truck inside of it, because I didn't know that this helicopter was a thing. I know that there are big helicopters that can lift, large things. I've just never seen one with a full size, dump truck or whatever this is, like inside of it. So, have you already talked about the helicopter and looked into it?
No, not at all. No, I didn't waste my time.
Well, I'm going to waste your time for a little bit and go down. And this took me down a rabbit hole that hopefully is interesting, but, the helicopter
I'm itself. Sure
the helicopter itself is a Mil Mi-26. It's also called a Halo. It's a Soviet Russian heavy transport helicopter, and it is the largest and most powerful helicopter ever to have gone into production. So, Totally makes sense that it can lift this truck seemingly no ease. But then, of course, it can't instantly deal with that weight shift. So that all makes sense. But of course, going through the airplane database, internet movie airplane database, which also does helicopters, I just decided, like, let me look up what other movies this thing's been in, and a lot of Russian movies. That makes sense.
It's a Russian helicopter.
I guess it's also in 2012, that John Cusack End of the World kind of movie. Yeah. And then one I saw is called Chernobyl, The Final Warning. So I clicked on that one, and it's like a TV movie from, I think, 1990 or 91 with John Voight. And then it said Jason Robards as Dr. Armand Hammer. I thought, but it also says, like, based on, the true story of those events and everything, I saw the name Dr. Armand Hammer, and I thought, why would they name this, give a ridiculous name to a character if this whole story is kind of, based on the real events of Chernobyl? So I clicked on him and, like, went down this rabbit hole of, there was a man named Armand Hammer, and it's spelled like, arm and hammer. And he was like a business tycoon in the 50s to 80s or whatever. I think he was most active. His great grandson is Army Hammer, the actor. I was looking up like, does he have any connection with the baking soda like brand, you know, that whole company? And found an article from thestraightdope.com. Says, did tycoon Armand Hammer have anything to do with Armand Hammer baking soda? And says there are several versions of how Hammer came by his name. The most widely circulated is that his father, a radical who apparently also had a weakness for weird puns, named him after the Arm and Hammer insignia of the Socialist Labor Party in 1898. Okay. 'Cause their logo is like almost identical to the, right. Yeah. explanation number two, which is perhaps even dumber, is that Arm and Hammer was named after the baking soda company. Hammer's mother, Mama Rose, described by her son as remarkably intuitive individual, said, you know, that baking soda had a simple solution for every problem. So I don't know. And then he, let's see, he himself would say that he was named after Armand Duval, the hero of Alejandro Dumas, his story, La Dame au Camelias, one of his father's favorite plays. But then he conceded that that wasn't really true. It was his father's socialist leanings. let's see. Yeah,
that would have been my guess of the three.
yeah. But then I guess later in life, because there was so much speculation about his name and the baking soda company, like his company, I forget what it was called. Occidental Petroleum was his company.
That sounds like a James Bond villain. Company.
Yeah. But apparently, like he wanted to, I don't know, take control of this. He decided, well, I'm just going to try and buy the parent company of Arm & Hammer, was Church & Dwight, and he tried buying them out, but they didn't want to sell. So in 86, he settled for the next best thing, a partnership with Church & Dwight that netted Hammer a sizable chunk of their stock, and it put Hammer on the board. So for a time, Arm & Hammer was a director and owner of Arm & Hammer. I guess after his death in 1990, they, the company sold the stock, split ways with Church and Dwight, because apparently figuring a pun was not the best basis for a lasting business relationship. So
yeah, probably not.
Yeah. But
that's very cool. Okay, that was very interesting. Thank you for
really
for
has nothing to do with this, but I just had fun going down that rabbit hole. So
it's in some ways more interesting than this movie, than parts of this movie. So you're fine with that.
All right.
And then so the helicopter is veering out of control, and the tail rotor spins around and starts chopping through the Russian sign on top. And Jack sees this as an opportunity to try to get away, and he starts running, and he sees Yuri and jumps on Yuri.
I like that shot when he's
dropping making him drop his gun.
I like that shot with Jack like flying through the air and Yuri like whipping the gun around, and he starts firing the gun, before he even makes it to aiming it at Jack, but he's already ready to fire at him. It's a well done little moment.
I like that. I mean, one of the things that keeps coming up when I've been talking about both Die Hard 4 and 5 is that it seems as if, these were two attempts to, pass the baton.
Mm-hmm.
And so like they were possibly wanting to pass the baton to Jai Courtney here. But again, he's no John McClane. He is John McClane, but he's no John McClane.
Yeah.
From that perspective. And then then John is watching this from the helicopter as he's, inside the truck, and he goes, Jesus Christ.
you mentioned that whatever the sign is that's on the building.
I don't know Russians. I couldn't tell you what
yeah. I like this as a location, like having it set in Chernobyl, that's really cool. But unfortunately, like the sign can't be lit up. Like that would be a nice addition to have like some light, sparks, you know, some sparks. Yeah. Like, you know, just, yeah. Like we've talked
yeah,
about
like what they did at the end of Die Hard with a Vengeance.
Yeah. Like, yeah. North, yeah.
You know, Nord the border or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So because this is such a dark, you know, action set piece, you know, some other lighting other than the helicopter's floodlight, like that would be nice, but
yeah, but we do have the fire raging inside.
Yeah, you know? Yeah.
but they're outside or they're up on top. So, and then we see that the helicopter starts veering downwards, and the door to the truck somehow opens, and John falls out and is hanging from the side of the, you know, from the door of the truck as that's happening. And then Jack lifts up Yuri, and Yuri says to him, "Well done, Mr. Super Spy." Again, terrible dialogue. And then he gets cut off because we've thankfully finished another 5 minutes of this movie. So did you have anything else you wanted to talk about of this 5 minute segment, Travis?
I don't think so.
All right. Excellent. So every day we have the game State Your Motto, where I will give a state and I will give my guest three choices as to what is the real state motto of that state. So your state today is Delaware.
Okay.
All right. So
I'm in Delaware.
Yes, you are. Wait, now you're not there anymore. Yeah. You blinked. You're out of it. So your choices are A, Union, Justice, and Confidence, B, Liberty and Independence, or C, All for Our Country.
I like B. I like Liberty and Independence.
And you would be correct. You got it right. Excellent. Yeah, most of the 13 colonies have things dealing with liberty and stuff like that. So,
yeah.
It was a good choice. Good choice. All right. And as a returning guest this season, so now we will play a quick trivia game of Die Hard Trivia. I will give you five trivia questions. So I'm going to spin the wheel because I do not know what questions I'm going to give you.
Okay.
So spinning the wheel. And around and around the wheel goes, and we will see what question Travis gets. Okay, your first question will be from Die Hard 4.
Of course.
Okay. What are the two different personas that Mai takes on during the film in order to help their plan along?
Oh, man, one of them was in our minutes, too.
Yes,
it
was.
We talked about it. God damn it. It was something that didn't seem to fit her, you know. I want to say that the last name was like Gonzalez or...
No, I'm not even talking... Sorry, let me rephrase it. I'm not even talking about the name. You don't have to tell me the name. You have to tell me what were her two jobs.
Oh.
That's the question. Sorry, I didn't want to make it too difficult by having you try and guess the names. Gotcha. That's way too difficult. Sorry.
Okay.
I mean, if you know the names, you can do that too. But that wasn't what I was looking for.
No, and I feel like the jobs were vague, like CIA analyst or IT professional. You know, I mean, I couldn't say, but I feel like they were pretty vague, like generic. You know, but
okay. So one of them was a police dispatcher.
Huh. Oh, right. Yeah, 'cause she was on the radio. Okay.
That's right.
Yeah.
Okay. You want to try and guess what the other one was then?
No, because that was I've forgotten about that one completely. So.
Okay. And the other one was an FBI agent.
Okay. Okay.
Okay.
Right on.
All right. No problem. You got four more. You know, maybe you'll get some from the first three movies.
Right.
Where there's more of a chance.
Yeah.
Okay. Your next one is from Die Hard 3. Okay.
Nice.
What is 21 of 42?
Just Jerry Arthur.
That's right.
Nice.
Excellent. All right, let us spin the wheel again for your third question. Okay, this one is from Die Hard 2. I guess we're moving back one by one.
Okay.
Okay, what was the medical reason for the last minute replacement?
Oh, it was one. Okay, it was one of someone's team, I think. Yeah.
That's right. And they said we had a last minute replacement because he had some.
Yeah. I think it was like food poisoning or something like that. I'm going to say food poisoning.
And appendicitis.
Okay.
Appendicitis. Well, you get the stomach part right.
So, yeah.
You know, that's good. Okay. All right. Now we will move on to the next one. Let's spin the wheel. See what question you're going to get. Okay, it's another one from Die Hard 2.
Yeah.
In what airport does the action take place in?
It's set in Dulles.
That is correct.
Okay.
Yeah, great.
They used the Colorado airport or something for the filming?
Denver, yeah. They used part of it in Denver.
Yeah.
All right. And your final question is from Die Hard 3.
Nice.
Okay. What was the answer to the riddle about the man from St. Ives?
The guy. Just the guy.
Okay. And for bonus, what's the numerical answer?
One.
How do you dial one?
0001.
That's right. Excellent.
See, Kittens, you cats, did well, sex, and wives.
The Die Hard 4 one,
yeah,
which is fine. All right, excellent. All right, Travis, would you like to once again tell people where they can find Travis Bow?
Yeah, so I'm still like in production on Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves. I've released the first 50 episodes of the show, and I've taken a little hiatus to work on more of the show. So you can either listen to it, you know, what's recorded, or you can wait for more. But yeah, that's where you can find me.
All right. Excellent. And I highly recommend it. I highly recommend that you try and find Travis. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Around Minute. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on Instagram. You can find me on my website, movieroundminute.com. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to movieroundminute@movierob.net. So until tomorrow, yippee-ki-yay.
Yippee-ki-yay.
Some folks are born made to wave the flag. Oh, they're red, white, and blue, yeah. But it ain't me, it ain't me. I ain't no fortunate one.